Yoga in all its forms has been a support for me in my life, through all the highs and lows. It's opened my mind and my heart in ways I never knew were possible. It has been a teacher, a taskmaster, and a friend. This podcast is an offering. I wish to share the teachings of yoga with you as a tool to help navigate life. Namaste, and welcome. Welcome. I'm so happy you're here. In these last few episodes, we have been discussing the kleshas, and kleshas are defined as afflictions, addictions, maybe sometimes obstacles. And we are, in this episode, going to discuss devesha. D-V-E-S-A. Devesha is defined as aversion, or, believe it or not, clinging to past suffering. And we'll look at that in some detail. So the way this has played out thus far is, if you go back a few episodes ago, I started as an introduction to the kleshas and to talk to you about avidya. Avidya is most commonly defined as ignorance. So you'll want to go back to the previous episodes to catch up to where we are now. After we spoke about the definition and the overview of kleshas and talked about avidya, ignorance, the following episode was about asmita, the next klesha, which is talks about pride and ego. And then in the last episode, we talked about raga, which is defined as attachment. Sometimes people, another word on that is sometimes people will, we talked about attachment and we talked about the misunderstanding around what we mean when we say we want to practice non-attachment. But I want to make note that sometimes people will blur the lines between a paragraha, which is one of the yamas. You can go back to earlier episodes where we broke down all the yamas and the niyamas in our eight limbs of yoga. They'll look at a paragraha in the same regard as attachment or non-attachment. Vragya, throwing all these Sanskrit words at you, but vragya is the Sanskrit word for non-attachment. A paragraha can be discussed in regards to being attached to our possessions, but it really speaks to clinging to our possessions and hoarding things in line with the rest of the yamas. When we talk about raga and devesha, we are talking about attachment to, in raga's case, pleasurable experiences, and in devesha's case, attachment to unpleasant experiences. So a word again on raga. I love this excerpt or this narrative in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali as commented on by Swami Satchidananda. And he talks about how everyone wishes to be happy. Do you know anything that doesn't? I'm paraphrasing and just doing this off the top of my head. But even a plant in your home will turn itself to grow towards the sun because that's what makes it happy. And he shares the fable of the musk deer. And the fable of the musk deer is that it lives in the forest and it catches this unbelievably pleasurable scent. And it goes in search of this scent, running here and there, meeting a bunch of other deer and maybe different foliage in the forest, only to come to realize that the scent that the musk deer is seeking that brings him or her so much happiness is actually, it exists on his own forehead or her own forehead. So we are very often seeking that which brings us pleasure outside of ourselves. When, as Sylvia Boorstein, the great writer and Buddhist teacher, says, happiness is an inside job. So when you listen on that past episode, the last episode on Raga, maybe think about that musk deer a little bit and how we do blemish our relationships by expecting others to make us happy, keep us content, when really that's our work. And when we know what brings us pleasure, and when we realize how simple our pleasures really are, our lives really do become more easeful. Okay, so now we're talking about devesha. And devesha, again, is aversion. So we were talking about asmita, which is ego and pride, and the self-identifications that are packed into our ego, our identifying with the self. Our likes and dislikes are very much in that container. They might be really the whole of the container. I think I said something like, raga in the last episode is probably one of the afflictions, those habitual patterns of behavior that they will form, they will form discontent more than any other klesha. I think the same could be said for devesha, because we can be very firm in what we don't like. We can be very firm in who we don't like. We can be very firm in from the minor to the major. Okay, you can go from, I really love to sleep in a cold room. I can't sleep in a hot room. I have a really hard time sleeping. If I'm not able to open the windows, I have to have some kind of air circulation, but a cold room is what I need to sleep. I am strongly averse to a hot room. And it's really not just sleeping. I mean, I could go through the day and if I walk into a room where my husband's turned the thermostat up, or I walk into a store where they're really cranking the heat, I don't like it. I get very uncomfortable. If we were speaking of Ayurveda, then you would recognize that I'm pitta dominant. So I personally am always on fire. So you can't put me in a hot room. I need the cold. I am averse to that kind of interior heat where the rooms are hot, the homes are hot. My sister-in-law, Sue, who I love dearly, knew that anytime she would come to my home for the holiday at Thanksgiving or Christmas, there would be windows open. I keep a cold house, so she'd always bring an extra sweater. That's just an example of aversion. So if I lived with someone who was strongly averse to a cold room at night, this would lead to constant bickering. Fortunately, my husband is amenable. Maybe he realized it's a battle he'll never win. Not for me to say. Taking a look at our aversions from just those small things to then see how do we identify in different ways with things that don't bring me pleasure. But we become attached to these things, just like we become attached to the things that bring us pleasure, because we have this notion that they are forming a solid sense of self. And we crave a solid sense of self because we really don't know how to exist in freedom and liberation of that solid sense of self. We fear it. The mind fears it. That's one of the reasons meditation is very challenging. It's not just challenging for some people. Meditation is very challenging. And the reason, one of the reasons anyway, that it can be so challenging is because the mind is designed to keep these narratives running. I like this, I don't like that. I like her, I don't like him. I like this political party, I don't like that political party. I like this temperature, I don't like that temperature. I like these kind of flowers, I don't like those kind of flowers. So our ego, our mind is constantly working to build these little personal IDs. So when you sit down to meditate, it's not that you're trying to clear your mind of all thought. That's impossible. What you do in meditation is you start to discern which thoughts are really necessary for you to investigate and which thoughts are really just causing a lot of static and unnecessary noise. And in meditation, we start to sift it out. Do I need this thought? Does this thought support me in living a fulfilled life of ease and contentment? Or does this thought bring me unnecessary agitation? And so on and so forth. So what you're doing in meditation is you are really taking a look at your attachment to pleasure and attachment to painful experience, what you like and what you don't like. So we can see that if we're going to cling to past suffering, which is another way to define dvesha, that is obviously going to be an affliction. You are going to be afflicted by this clinging to past suffering. Dvesha is an emotional trigger. It's, you know, all triggers are based on past experiences. And naturally, we're hardwired to do our best to avoid things that we know are going to bring us pain. And this klesha, dvesha, is imbued with the fear of experiencing that thing again. So whatever a past experience might be for you, a trauma, you are of the mind and of the belief that you must be hypervigilant so as to never face that same situation again or a situation that's similar. You're spending your life avoiding triggers. I've talked about this in the past. There are many different examples I could give you, but I think you understand where your triggers are, what your buttons are that could get pushed, what are things that you avoid in your life because it brought you heartbreak or loss. And if we continue to look at our traumas and our relationships to things that have been unpleasurable or painful, we're really playing. I get that vision of the three cups and, you know, the ball. We're just, maybe I've used that image before because it comes up for me a lot in these, but it's like, we're just moving the cups around and it's just a game. You know, it's just a parlor game of, I have to always be hypervigilant to make sure I don't walk into this kind of situation or to make sure I don't befriend this kind of person because I've been hurt before or I've had suffering or past experience. I'm going to do my best to not relive. That is not how we will heal, grow, or shine. It is how we stay scared and small. It's how we increase our anxiety over the years, just constantly helping ourselves to dig this groove or create this impression or samskara. This is bad. This is good. Stay away from these people, these circumstances. Instead, what we are meant to do is to walk through these situations and show ourselves, just ourselves, because we're really all that matters in this situation. Show ourselves that we are resilient, that we are strong, that we can handle anything that is brought our way, because we have. And we have survived many, many things, loss, heartbreak, many things. But we don't give ourselves the credit that we're due. And we go into more of a coping mechanism of avoiding things that remind us of unpleasant experiences. Again, it is an affliction because it's another attachment. So you are, like I said, hypervigilant to that which makes you suffer. When we repress or avoid the things that make us uncomfortable and that drudge up painful memories, we are deepening the impression of those events in our body, 100%. So samskaras, which we talk about often, scar, it's where we get the word scars from or impressions. We keep digging a groove deeper and deeper and deeper that is in support of the idea that this thing must be avoided, that I cannot survive this thing if I'm faced with it again. Even though if I were to look in the rearview mirror of my life, I would see all of the mountains that I have climbed quite successfully. And thereby recognizing my strength, my ability to be standing upright. You might have knocked me down. You know, past experiences might have been traumatic. They will definitely try to rear their heads, whether it's in a new costume or in a new series of events, or whether it's memories from the past. And that is not an act of torture. The universe is not trying to punish us. The universe is showing you. It's saying, here, remember this? You got through this. You're okay. We're just reminding you. You know, the universe is saying, we're showing you your strengths. Walk through this. Walk into this and know that you can handle anything. You've got this. So it's that idea that if we keep avoiding that which is unpleasant and uncomfortable, I don't know. It's like we think that that's how we will get strong, but it actually wears us down. And it increases our anxiety to the point where we don't even have a direct storyline to why we're anxious in the now. Because some of this stuff that we've repressed is really repressed. We've done a really good job of pushing it down or pushing it away or compartmentalizing it. When in actuality, if we allow ourselves, if we have faith in ourselves, if we believe in ourselves, if we allow ourselves to really look at the things that we have survived, you know, our brain is wired for survival. And I talk about that a lot also. But what we do is we mess it up. You know, we go, well, okay, I have to survive. That was a really terrible situation, or I had a really terrible childhood, or things are never going to look like that, or I'm never going to get my heart broken like that again, or whatever the case may be, or been betrayed by a friend. It's never going to happen again. We think that the key to survival is to rearrange our life in a way that that never happens again. We never find ourselves in a room with people that are going to break our hearts. That's not the key to survival. That's not how the brain is wired. The brain is actually wired to reorganize the files that say, oh, dangerous situation or unpleasant event. It wants you to open up that file of that situation that happened and be able to look straight at it and see the similarities to what might be happening in your day now or in your life now, in order for you to say, well, I survived that. I picked myself up. I made some changes. I can survive this. That's survival. Survival isn't dipping and dodging and trying to get away from everything that might remind you of an unpleasant experience. You know, I've told a story in the past, and since it keeps popping up to the front of my mind as I'm talking, I'll share it again. But the story was in my childhood, one of the, unsafe sounds that I would hear as a child is slamming doors. And so that meant that my parents were arguing. And if my parents were arguing, it was going to be explosive and it was going to be days long and it was going to be very, I won't know then, and it'll take me a long time to realize just how traumatic it'll be. But slamming doors was not a good thing. So now I get my own home and I have my kids, and you know, the first teenager, or maybe it was a 9-year-old, I don't know who it was, somebody slammed a door. And I remember having a reaction. I remember inside of myself saying, there's no door slamming here. Now this is my home. I make my home safe by saying, rule number one, nobody slams a door in my home. But that's not, first of all, how can you live like that, right? Somebody's going to slam a door, or the wind might blow a door shut. What I need to show myself is that on the other side, not literally on the other side of the door, but on the other side of experiencing a door slamming moment, I get to stand in that space and say, oh, let me look around. I'm not in my childhood home and I'm not in my childhood body. And an hour goes by and it was just a slam door. It's okay. Yeah, it might represent that somebody is frustrated or somebody is angry or somebody's having a bad day. And in my world that I built, we communicate about those things to the best of our ability, you see. But to make a rule that there'll never be a slam door in my home, that's not going to teach me resilience. That's going to make me always on edge, waiting for a door to slam. And then if you do slam a door, it doesn't matter if it's 10 or 30 years after I've been a child, I'm going to snap at you. And that's going to cause a friction and a tension in a relationship. I hope that makes sense, because slamming doors is an aversion. because it recalls a childhood memory of trauma, being unsafe. So I cannot control the world and all the doors. But what I can do is I can continually show myself that after a door is slammed, I'm safe because I keep myself safe. And that's how I grow stronger and stronger. So again, because I find them very delectable and very palatable, another excerpt from The Path of the Yoga Sutras by Nikolai Bachman, I'd like to share with you on Devesha. A painful trauma often strengthens Devesha. The traumatic experience creates a deep imprint in memory and an automatic aversion to some or all aspects of the event. This imprint, samskara, will likely affect how you act in the future, especially when a new situation arises that contains an aspect of the previous trauma. Our heart mind has been programmed to avoid at all costs anything that might recreate the suffering you went through during the trauma. For example, as a young child, you ran off from your parents' view and were soon surrounded by four barking dogs. Your life seemed threatened and a deep fear of dogs was instilled in you. Since then, even very friendly dogs scare you. Over time, you can move from extreme caution around dogs to an awareness of when it is okay or not okay to pet a dog, allowing the trauma to inform better, safer habits and then fade as the new habits strengthen, will permit the past event to take its proper place in the present. And I continue further on. Sometimes our aversion takes the form of discomfort around certain people, such as immediate family members. Since we are culturally obligated to see family members every so often, we have ample opportunities to work through this particular kind of devesha. Every time an aversion erupts is an opportunity to reduce its control of your actions. Future suffering can be avoided if we make a sincere and persistent effort to gain insight into who we really are and how we can consciously act from our divine inner nature instead of unconsciously reacting based on old harmful patterns of behavior. And isn't that growth? To me, that's growth. That's continuing to firm myself up, stand up taller. You know, I could use a whole bunch of visuals as far as asana and yoga postures go, but why not just Tadasana, mountain pose, right? As we stand firmly on our own two feet, big toes touching, heels comfortably close, inner thighs pressed back, ribs lift up off the waist, chest is open, sternum is lengthened, chin is level with the ground, shoulders roll back, arms lengthen alongside the body, fingertips reach towards the floor. I am mountain, Tadasana. Just try and knock me over. Thanks for listening. We've got one more klesha, abhinivesha, which is clinging to life or fear of death. We'll talk about that in the next episode. Hands together at the heart center. May all beings be happy and peaceful. May all beings be healthy and strong. May all beings be safe and protected. May all beings live with ease. Namaste.